This hour by Frederick Remington, fully cooked, ready-to-eat bacon. Exclusive, no refrigeration, 10-year extended shelf life bacon. The thickest media center-cut bacon in the industry at fullycookedbacon.com.
Your host for the show. We're going to be talking today with Chief Thomas Jackson, whose book is Policing Ferguson, Policing America. Chief Jackson had the dubious distinction of being on duty when all kinds of hostile forces formed what was almost a perfect storm to ruin a perfectly nice suburban town outlying in the outskirts of St. Louis. And he's written a book about this series of events that took place called Policing Ferguson, Policing America. Chief Jackson, thank you so much for being with me today.
Very happy to be with you.
I've read the book, and it was kind of an eye-opener. It was obviously an ordeal. And I must say, you kind of touched on one of the points that I had in the back of my mind as I was reading it. That was the ability of the desire of the people of the area to protect themselves. But why don't we go back and just start at the beginning? Because Ferguson had been making lots of progress. It was getting all kinds of things done in the area of social improvement. The town was really kind of on the move, and as you described it at one point in the book, it was a kind of a go-to shopping area, at least before it got torched by the demonstrators.
Yes, it absolutely was. In the time that my city manager got there and then I arrived as chief, in those 4 years that we were working together, we really brought a lot of progress to that city. One of the things, it won an international award for programs that benefit particularly minority children. And we developed more neighborhood associations. We had 9 neighborhood associations by the time I left at a town of 20,000. We brought in all the major box stores. We had still had the world headquarters of Emerson Electric. And, you know, we had all kinds of outreach programs into the community. And in the area where this particular shooting happened, Michael Brown incident, that area was where all, you know, it's concentrated poverty, the biggest collection of public housing and subsidized housing in the St. Louis region was right there in that little corner of Ferguson. And so we had brought in all the property owners who were mostly absentee and forced them by telling them they couldn't rent out any more apartments until they complied with these things that were going to improve the safety and quality of life for the residents there. And it was working. Crime was way down. And I think we had a couple of homicides a year when I was there, but last year they had 13. So kind of like what the DOJ did to them.
There were a lot of people getting involved in Ferguson who came in after these things that you described, because the idea of Ferguson was some kind of accident waiting to happen just doesn't match with your experience that you described in your book, Policing Ferguson, Policing America. One of the things that had been in my mind as I was reading it, I kept recalling that during the Watts riots, the Korean merchants had defended their properties with their own guns because there was such chaos that the police simply weren't able, maybe weren't willing, but weren't able to protect those merchants. And they were able to substantially protect themselves, their enterprises from being burned out. Now, you made a mention that there was a considerable effort in Ferguson among the merchants to protect themselves, but apparently it just wasn't enough.
No, it wasn't. There wasn't enough people that that did that. And quite frankly, the amount of people that came in simply to destroy and burn and loot was overwhelming. And, you know, but we did have a lot of people that used their Second Amendment right to protect their own property because they saw what happened the first night of the riots, you know, when so much property was destroyed. And the discussion, the estimates about how much damage was going to be done on the night of the grand jury verdict, actually the intelligence reported that we would expect to have somewhere around 20 people killed during that riot that night of the grand jury verdict. So, you know, folks, you know, came up to me and basically said, you know, don't worry about my place. You know, I've got it. One story where I drove by one of the shops in town, body shop, got a close friend of mine, and you know, this is while people are running all over the streets, burning and tearing things up, and we're chasing them. You know, hundreds of people, thousands of people, and pulled up in front of Steve's place, and he stepped out the door and I said, "Steve, you got any problems?" He said, "No, you don't even need to worry about me." He had a AR-15 in a sling and a 45 in his hip, so we didn't worry about Steve.
Really, just a lot of untold stories in the media that were provided by your narrative of what had happened. One of the things that you've already touched on, but I wanted to make sure that we nailed it hard, is that you had worked to get many of the absentee landlords to clean up their properties. And it just struck me that not only are you making Ferguson a more attractive place to live and work, but clearly police work, maybe it always has been, but it certainly is now a lot more than catching bad guys. You almost need a degree in social work to be a cop.
It really is getting that bad where, you know, a certain large portion of the population just assumes that socializing another portion of the population is the job of the police, that we should, you know, force them to take personal responsibility. That's not our job. It's basically the opposite of our job. Ours is to take enforcement when people, you know, commit crimes and to protect life and property to the best of our ability. But it's not to socialize people.
Okay, go ahead.
But see, that area, though, it's like you take the biggest concentrated poverty, public housing, violent crime area, plop it down into a tiny little town, and then say, it's your problem. Because that's essentially what happened. And so then essentially it became law enforcement's problem because there was, you know, just so much crime in that little area.
The trigger for the event, we're led to believe, although as you described, there were a lot of people eager to help fan that flame of that initial spark, was a couple of guys doing something that it was apparently done all too often. Michael Brown, who ended up getting shot, and Darian Johnson, his friend who apparently doesn't always tell the truth, walking down the middle of the street, not the sidewalk, but the street. And apparently this was something that had been done fairly often as a way to irritate other people in town or those even driving through. And I don't know, maybe just to show who's boss, but it was creating quite a problem. And that was the initial complaint that the officer had responded to when just before everything got kind of set loose.
Right. Yeah, and his comment to them was, "Hey, fellas, what's wrong with the sidewalk?" You know, that's what the officer said. And then pretty much immediately he recognized that this was probably the folks that he had heard broadcast over the radio that had just done the strong army. And that's when he ordered him to stop. And he was immediately attacked.
Yeah, it was a strong arm robbery. A Chinese American merchant who had been, from the video, just kind of lifted up by the scruff of his neck by Michael Brown, who is a big guy. Here we're coming into a break. We're talking with Thomas Jackson, the police chief at the time in Ferguson, Missouri, and we're going to be back and get some more information about what happened there on the Gun Owners News Hour. This is Larry Pratt.
This is Fred.
Hi, I'm Fred.
Fred's a repeater.
I tend to repeat.
Fred has a business.
I do have a business.
And a problem. Fred repeats the same tired advertising over and over, and now it doesn't work.
Over and over.
But Fred is about to see a vision.
I'm seeing a vision.
Advertising on the Genesis Communications Network is the smart way for Fred to reach his potential customers with the most affordable national advertising rates, period. Get started today with GCN, the Genesis Communications Network. Just email advertise@gcnlive.com.
It's been said, any society is only 3 missed meals away from chaos. Those times may be near. Think about it. Our country faces multiple terrorist threats and aggressions from Russia and North Korea. Social unrest and violent marches yet again may lead to looting of stores and city shutdowns. And our crumbling infrastructure leaves our power grid vulnerable to long-term outages from a single cyber attack. When the chaos from any one of these threats arises, the government knows it can't provide during a widespread national emergency. That's why you need your own plan for self-reliance. That's where My Patriot Supply comes in. Get a 4-week survival food supply for only $99. That includes breakfast, lunches, and dinners. Order online at preparewithgcn.com. $99 for 4 weeks of survival food that tastes like homemade cooking and lasts up to 25 years from My Patriot Supply. Get your kits today at preparewithgcn.com. Free shipping is included. Preparewithgcn.com.
If you like alkaline water, or know someone that does, you're going to love the Dillon Living Water Bottle. It creates alkaline water on the go while reducing plastic waste and saving you money. Made with surgical-grade stainless steel, the Dillon Bottle increases the pH up to 9 to deliver both alkaline and antioxidant water anywhere you want it. Alkaline water is healthier, tastes better, and can even boost energy. The Dillon Bottle makes it easy and affordable to be healthy and achieve optimal hydration. Get your Dillon Bottle today at dyln.co. That's dyln.co.
I'm David Hall, founder of Diamond Gusset, where we're proud of our 100% grown and sewn American-made jeans. Whether you're out for dinner, working on the farm, or on the road, Diamond Gusset Jeans offers a full spectrum of styles and sizes for any occasion. To find yours, visit gusset.com. That's G-U-S-S-E-T.com. Our loyal customers enable us to continue sponsoring Liberty Media outlets like the one you're listening to. In Liberty, David Hall, Diamond Gusset Jean Company.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep REM sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever. You can buy one of my pillows and get one absolutely free.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-870-0305 and use promo code GCN. That's MyPillow.com or 800-870-0305 with promo code GCN.
Hunters, anglers, campers, and survivalists, get back to nature. Expand your horizons with the highest quality, most versatile, unique slingshots and sling bows on the market at slingbow.com. Slingbow products are compact and models start from just $17.98. They're perfect for your bug out bag or storing in your vehicle. Give yourself and your loved ones the excitement and tradition of slingbow, a new frontier in archery and truly modern twist on this primitive survival tool. Feel the thrill only at slingbow.com.
I need to correct what I said going into break. Old habits sometimes die hard, but this is the Second Amendment News Hour. We're talking about the news and views that affect the Second Amendment. And as I have for a long time, I want to put the Second Amendment and the gun issue into a larger context. just for openers, of course, we have the whole Bill of Rights, of which the Second Amendment is part of. And so that provides the framework for much of the discussion that I try to bring to what we're calling now the Second Amendment News Hour. My guest today is Thomas Jackson, who was the chief of police in Ferguson during the recent unpleasantness there, an eyewitness to all kinds of forces that, as I mentioned in the first segment, appear to me to be like a perfect storm of all the bad things that could possibly come together at the same time. Kaboom. They hit Ferguson and hit Ferguson hard. Chief Jackson was there with his force in this small town trying to deal with the issues that were, frankly, not, by and large, from what you reported, Chief, these were not problems at the moment that were being caused by those from the area, but were because the people that were in the area, they're merchants, they live there, they're being burned out. Their jobs are being torched. Their homes are being torched. It's a little hard to believe that no matter how much bitterness there might be in a population, that they're going to want to try to burn themselves out. That just doesn't make any sense. And yet that was actually the narrative that we were asked to believe by the by most of the media.
Yes, absolutely was. The first thing what I learned very early on in this thing is the power of social media, because this fake story about hands up, don't shoot went out all over the world within minutes of this thing happening. So we have a whole world thinking that a police officer in broad daylight at noon in a town that's heavily populated, people around, it's a beautiful, hot August afternoon, and in front of everybody, shot down somebody in cold blood while he had his hands in the air surrendering. It's an impossible narrative for me to believe, and I knew pretty much believed it was false right when I heard it. It went all over the world, and people believed it, and they descended on Ferguson, and we were never able to really get in front of that narrative and say, no, that's not what happened. You know, he attacked the police officer and tried to kill him. He actually grabbed the gun and turned it twice, pointed into the officer's chest before he was able to wrest it away, and then it fired inside the car. So that was the one thing. And then the other narrative that the media put out, the mainstream media, I guess, was that Ferguson was this horrible, oppressive place. And then the Justice Department bought into that and spread that too. And it's just absolutely untrue. It's a Renaissance city.
When the Justice Department went in and they had their quote unquote investigators there, if they got a negative account of conditions in Ferguson, of what had happened that day, that was good. That was gospel. And they apparently never made any effort, as any police investigation should, to corroborate what they were being told. They just took what they wanted and said, that's what happened. And that became the kind of the confirmation of the initial hands up, don't shoot nonsense that was clearly not what happened. And in fact, a grand jury didn't buy it. A grand jury which had, what was it, 3-4 African-Americans on it? So why should the rest of the country believe something that people on the scene, people who might be assumed to be invested in the narrative, didn't buy? And as they would say, they no-billed. There was no further prosecution. Well, that's, of course, that was the excuse to then have the rioting and to burn the town down. But as I was saying, as we were both saying, in the first segment, that's not what happened. The people that lived there weren't interested in destroying their homes, their livelihoods. It's really asking a lot for the American people to believe that there could be a population so suicidal that they would do that.
Yeah, and they weren't. You know, when I saw, for example, the second night, which was really the first night of riots, when, you know, there was just people as far as you could see on three sides of us, just horrible, horribly violent threats. And then the gunfire started. And then when I saw the Quick Trip catch on fire, which is where a lot of the folks in that particular area, that was their gathering place. It's where they got their milk and their walking distance for most of them. And so I knew that wasn't my people. And then just looking around this giant crowd of people, I didn't see anybody I recognized. And like I said, it's a small town, with 20,000 people. So the folks that came in and started doing the damage, the first couple of nights were coming in from St. Louis, maybe Chicago and Kansas City, and then they started coming in from all over the country and really all over the world. And these groups started popping up with new names like the Hands Up, Don't Shoot group and Black Lives Matter and Organization for the Black Struggle. We had Anonymous there, all kinds of groups of every shape, size, and color. It was unbelievable. Nick, there, go ahead.
Now, there's a guy that I don't see him on CNN, but apparently he's one of their talking heads, Don Lemon. And you point out that he was on camera talking about the peaceful protests that are going on here in Ferguson while the camera showing over his shoulder, fires raging, a protester throwing a smoke bomb. These were not the peaceful protesters that he was telling the live audience about that they could see with their own eyes wasn't really that peaceful.
No, I know. It was so horrific, the narrative that they were putting out. And the fact that they kept calling people peaceful was really irritating because there were rarely any peaceful protests other than the morning protesters that set up across the street and just held signs and waved at us, really. But then, the people would wake up in the afternoon and they'd start showing up. And they were being put up. These folks were being put up in churches and in various places. So the people came in town, had places to congregate and plot and plan what they were wanting to do. And they started actually organizing into something of a paramilitary force.
There was a picture, apparently, out of the wire services, clergy and minister to the police. A bunch of angry protesters, may or may not have been clergy, they were moving from the police line.
Yeah, they
almost smiling dogs. Let's pick up on this point when we get back. I hear the music bringing us in to another break. We're talking today on the Second Amendment News Hour, your host Larry Pratt, with Chief Thomas Jackson of the Ferguson.
This is Jessica Armand, founder of My Magic Mud. Our team helped organize a successful effort to remove fluoride from our city's water supply. This is our passion. My Magic Mud Oral Care purifies and brightens your smile naturally. GCN listeners, please support my family business by purchasing our products from your local health food store. We're also available at CVS Pharmacy. Or visit us at MyMagicMud.com and take 10% off now with coupon code GCN10.
Pro Pure Gravity Water Filters. Most tested, most trusted. The Pro One G2.0 all-in-one filter by Pro Pure removes and reduces up to 200 plus contaminants, including fluoride, lead, and more. There's no priming required, no add-on filter needed for fluoride reduction, and it's totally reusable. There's a size to fit most competitive brands of gravity water filter systems. Pro Pure Water Filters. When you don't know what's in your water, visit an authorized Pro Pure dealer or ProPureUSA.com.
Attention business owners and independent contractors. This is a money-saving message from Tax Mediation Services. If your business owes $20,000 or more in taxes, we can help you today, right now. Listen, dealing with the IRS is no picnic. It's an intimidating and extremely stressful process, and you don't want to go it alone. Our attorneys know every law, every tax break, and every possible opportunity to help you resolve and reduce your tax debt. And if you owe more than $20,000, $1,000, you may be at the top of their hit list. So don't take your tax debt lightly, because it will not go away on its own. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, your home, and even shut down your business. Call our tax experts today at 1-800-261-9818 and let us deal with the IRS while you focus on your business. That's 1-800-261-9818. Again, 800-261-9818.
Hello, this is Dr. Bill Deagle, MD of NutraMedical.com, announcing the breakthrough Red Deer Velvet DR. It delivers the protected building blocks of all organs and tissues, allowing your own stem cells as architects and engineers to regenerate you. Not since fetal life, when aging does not occur, has such an amazing NutraMed been available to help heal you and regenerate you. Anti-aging requires that you correct mineral, activated nutraceutical, and jump the gene defects and poor diet you have to deliver the cellular tools for regeneration. You must remove old damaged cells and replace them with your young healthy cells to wind the biological clock to a younger you. Order your Red Deer Velvet DR now at NutraMedical.com 24/7 or 888-212-8871. That's NutriMedical, N-U-T-R-I, Medical, M-E-D-I-C-A-L.com. Or call our order line, 888-212-8871.
Policies issued by American General Life Insurance Company, Houston, Texas. Not available in all states. For details, visit AIGdirect.com.
If you're young and healthy, you don't need life insurance, right? Yeah, that's what I used to think, too, until my brother died at 38. Joe left his wife with two kids, a mortgage, and a stack of bills she couldn't pay. Mary had to sell the house and move everybody into this tiny two-bedroom apartment just to make ends meet. I never want to do that to my wife, so I got life insurance. I called AIG Direct and was really surprised how affordable it is. Just $14 a month for $250,000 of term life coverage. Listen, if you have a family, you should seriously think about getting life insurance. You'll feel a lot better having it. Trust me.
Call AIG Direct for a free, no-obligation quote. The call takes less than 5 minutes, and you could save up to 70%. Call now. 1-800-910-7981. That's 1-800-910-7981. 1-800-910-7981.
To the Second Amendment News Hour. Talking today with Chief Thomas Jackson of the Ferguson, Missouri Police Department, where, as we've already been discussing, some really bad things were coming down. And these were not things that, from all indications, were springing up from the people that lived there, at least not by and large. And we were just talking about the clergy that... And this one wire photo described as ministering to the police as they moved on a police line, standing there in their protective gear. Not exactly the way I picture clergy ministering to people. My idea is more sitting down and talking and maybe holding hands, maybe praying with them. But this was like a battle line of people, so-called clergy, more likely the folks that had come from different parts of the area and even the country as this went on, and they were there trying to provoke a situation, it would seem to me, with the police, and then the police would be accused of bashing peaceful clergy ministering to the police. Doesn't get much more difficult to deal with than that, I would think.
No, and that was just organized march by some guy who was trying to make a name for himself. He's going to be the next civil rights leader. I guess we'll mention his name. But you got these ministers coming from all over the country. And I say ministers, I use the term very loosely, and they were going to march, on the station. So, and block the roads and do all those things that they did. And then they came up to the officers and they just started, calling them all kinds of horrible names. Why are you such a racist? Why aren't you ashamed of yourself? You're going to go to hell and all this stuff. And the next day I see in the Post-Dispatch, local newspaper, a picture of this. And it says, members of the clergy minister to Ferguson police officers. Well, I lost my mind. I emailed everybody at the newspaper and said, you knew better than that. Your photographer was there. He knew better than that. You know, this is a lie that you put. They wrote me back. The president called me back and said, you know, they used the wrong term. They should have said confront instead of minister. You know, an easy mistake to make. Of course, an officer off to the side with just one of those clergy members. So it just looked like they were having a one-on-one talk. She was calling her names. But again, they put the same thing in there. Ministers to Ferguson police officer. So they were just letting me know that they have all the ink.
One of the things that you mentioned, I think, would be, well, for any police officer to keep in mind for anything, God forbid, of the same sort in the future, is that when something goes out over social media, it's not enough to stand in front of a local, say, news radio microphone to rebut what was going out falsely on social media. The response also has to come, especially via that same media, because that's the way people were learning, and they may not have necessarily been tuned into other media. So the narrative they're getting in their mind is coming through that particular media, be it Facebook or whatever it might be, and the authorities have to realize that that's the way they have to respond. That's the medium they have to use as well. And I thought that was a very important lesson.
It really is, and what police departments are going to have to do around the country, especially smaller ones, is maybe have a rapid response social media team, not necessarily police officers, but people that know how to use it, who are willing to respond, sort of like, you know, the Red Cross volunteers from around the country that know there's a disaster. Because really, things like New York City, L.A., Chicago, they can handle that social media. They can have a social media staff that can respond to things like this. But a small town can't keep that number of people. We were so overwhelmed on social media and also by the attacks that we got using social media, whereas, you know, people would be told to, you know, send me an email, calling me a despot or something, and so then I get, you know, 10,000 emails in a single day. So it just bogged down my system, and then, you know, they call my phone and shameful messages and stuff like that. They did it to the whole city, you know, websites and stuff too. And social media is a very, very powerful weapon, and it's what caused Ferguson to burn out.
Now, the impression that we would get is that, initially at least, this was something that had engulfed the whole city, when in fact the demonstrations and the rioting was rather localized. You recounted how your wife had been doing Meals on Wheels for the elderly, and you were perhaps a block away from the protests, and life was going on normally in most of the city. But, of course, the picture we're getting is that the city was already in flames and was beyond redemption.
Yeah. The protests initially were at the site of the shooting, and then eventually they came over to the public safety complex in front of the fire department and police department. And it was localized there most of the time, but oftentimes they would, you know, march through the town and bang on drums and things like that at night. When we had the lootings and the burnings and things like that, that would be, you know, really area-wide. It wasn't just confined to Ferguson.
But
I was going to mention what happened when the death threats started coming in against me and my family and others. But they actually arrested two members of the New Black Panther Party who were trying to, they're actually going to blow up my house and Bob McCullough, the prosecutor's house, and they were going to blow up the yard too, you know, because why not? So my neighbors, my brothers, were guys to watch for my house at night, you know, so that I could come home and get a few hours sleep. And so I had guys, you know, ex-military, ex-cops, current cops, you know, my neighbors, ex-CIA, FBI stuff. You know, would camp out on my street and in my court. And, you know, I get people out there with 50 calibers, AR-15, shotguns. I mean, every kind of weapon you could imagine. And, you know, that kept people away. Nobody was going to get anywhere close.
The Second Amendment came in pretty handy as it turned out, for the threat that your family was facing. And from what you're saying in the book, Policing Ferguson, Policing America, it wasn't just you, but a good many of the officers, people knew who they were. They were in their name ID, and they were getting threats, as were you, and apparently a lot of them have left the force and moved out of the area.
Yes, yes, that's exactly what happened, because, some of them, there'd be 40, 50 people in front of their houses, yelling, screaming at them, doing vandalism and stuff. It was really a bad situation for the officers.
Now, politics within the state were part of this. Democrat Governor Jay Nixon had appointed a state trooper, if I got it right. Ron Johnson, I got the name right?
Yeah.
And he came in to assess the situation and make recommendations. And he was concerned about what it might look like for the what the cops were doing, but he never considered, apparently, what it looked like when a city is burning down. And something I wanted to mention a bit earlier in my notes, that at more than once there was unidentified gunfire heard from the back of these crowds that were doing the demonstrating. So it was a little hello that there's more going on than even maybe what you can see with your own eyes.
Oh, sure. And that was one of the many blunders on the part of the governor and other politicians. Ron Johnson, he was clearly put in there for optics, because they thought it would look better if there was a black police officer in charge. But he was a captain of highway patrol. Really no experience in riot control.
When we get back, let's pick up there, because I think this is very helpful that we see the bigger picture of how this narrative got out of control. Don't do that. Jackson, Policing Ferguson.
Healthcare reform is confusing. With the loss of the Obamacare mandate, those needing help can now choose an affordable alternative. By joining Liberty HealthShare, you're part of a community of health-conscious Americans all over the country who control their own healthcare costs and choices. Liberty HealthShare is not insurance. It is an association of self-pay patients who unite with like-minded people to share the cost of their medical needs. Neighbor helping neighbor. Learn more now by going to libertyoncall.org. That's libertyoncall.org.
Let's talk tough. Let's talk comfort. Let's talk about down home value. Made in the USA blue jeans, like you wore as a kid. Remember?
There's a place down in Tennessee where they make blue diamond gusset jeans. They show pride in every stitch. Guarantee you love the way they fit. Put a diamond gusset in the crotch where you need it most. Blue diamond gusset's got it. Others don't.
For good old-fashioned comfort, get diamond gusset jeans. Every stitch guaranteed. And our Defender motorcycle jean comes Kevlar reinforced. See them at GUSSET.com. That's gusset.com. Or call 888-848-7738. That's 888-848-7738. Diamond gusset jeans got it. Others don't.
Most of you know that heart disease is the number one silent killer in the U.S. What if I told you for just $54.95 a month you could fight against heart disease naturally? At Heart and Body Extract, we've been helping thousands of people get back to a healthier heart. Don't just take my word for it. Check out all of the success stories at hbextract.com. Or to order, call 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. hbextract.com. Don't risk it when you can take charge of it.
Get the ultimate knife at an ultimate price. The Fox Karambit Knife. Finally available in the U.S. The Fox Karambit Knife opens with one hand, faster than you can pull a handgun. For utility, for defense, and for way less than other knives of this caliber. Go to TheUltimateKnife.com. Truly the best knife you will ever own. And only available at TheUltimateKnife.com. Use promo code radio at checkout for free shipping. Get the ultimate knife at the ultimate price at TheUltimateKnife.com.
Have you checked your Google search results lately? Search results are usually the first impression that people form of you or your business. So make sure that they create a positive impression with ReputationDefender.com. What the internet says about you can have a big impact on your life and your livelihood, even if it's not true. Fortunately, you can now control how you look online and in online search results with ReputationDefender.com. Call 800-831-0771 now. That's 800-831-0771 for your free Reputation analysis. If you have negative material from an ex-employee, upset patient, or former client, newspaper article, legal issue, social media, or other source showing up in your search results, you can combat it with ReputationDefender.com. Our dedicated experts in patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-831-0771 to learn more. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771. Or visit ReputationDefender.com.
Bacon lovers, we ship free. Try our amazing bacon. No refrigeration required. Proprietary value-added packaging provides 10-year shelf life and protects the leanest, thickest, center-cut, fully cooked bacon in America today. Ready to eat right from the pouch or warm and serve. Savory and delicious. Wholesale price for your everyday use. Order today at ReadyToEatBacon.com. ReadyToEatBacon.com.
But what happened in Ferguson, then police chief of the city, Thomas Jackson, has written a book about this. It's very informative, Policing Ferguson, Policing America, the idea being in that second part of the title that there are lessons for police and the rest of the country, that this wasn't something that was peculiar to Ferguson, Missouri. And in fact, as we've already pointed out, there were people, troublemakers, that once they saw what was happening in the first day or so there in Ferguson, got themselves to Ferguson as quickly as they could and joined the Band of Merry rioters so that they could contribute to the chaos as well. And I want to keep emphasizing that probably the biggest part of trying to control the narrative was social media. And if I get it right, Chief, that's really where the city of Ferguson, you all, lost control of the narrative, because that's, I, to paraphrase something, I believe it was Churchill that said when he said that a lie goes halfway around the world before truth gets its pants on. Well, it goes around the world now on social media.
Yeah, and we really were absolutely unprepared for what we were about to face in social media. And it was really a while before we could figure out why this had become such a huge thing. You know, I had media coming in from all over the world. I had Al Jazeera in town, and really it was social media, because this thing could go around the world, just like Churchill said, went around the world quick. And we never got around
it. It went around on the evening news, and politics, unhappily, was a considerable factor. This we've been mentioning before the last break, that Governor Nixon, the Democrat, had been, well, he had appointed this black state patrolman in the hopes that somehow the optics would be improved by having somebody who was African-American in charge of the investigation. Well, it didn't work that way, and in fact, the officers in Ferguson were appalled at what Johnson was saying to the media versus what was actually happening. And there was a roll call, I guess the first morning after Johnson had been on duty, and officers were shouting at him, "You lied! You lied! You didn't tell what was really happening!" It must have driven these officers crazy. No wonder some of them, maybe many of them, have already left the city.
Yeah, and the officers that we had in town for riot detail, you know, was every night, every single night, there was a riot of some kind, some force, and for 4 months. But the officers were in from all departments, St. Louis City, St. Louis County, St. Charles County, and Highway Patrol. But what he did is they put him in charge, you know, allegedly in charge. They didn't have any experience in this matter. But to look good, and so they had declared a state of emergency, which made this guy in charge, this Highway Patrol captain, and he ordered everybody to stand down the next night. So there was all kinds of destruction and violence and rocks and bottles, and two officers went to the hospital that night, and he came on the news the next morning and told the press that it was a night of peace. And the officers just, you know, were absolutely taken aback by that. And he really, that captain kind of took the side of the people who were doing the destruction. He wanted to be their hero and their golden boy. And he lost all respect with the ranks. And, you know, ultimately, you know, we had to take back over with, you know, trying to put these riots down, which we were actually having success doing, you know, until the governor stepped in and tried to make things not better.
Now, it wasn't that all of those from outside the area were trying to make things worse. You mentioned that there's a black law enforcement executive headed up by Chuck Ramsey, and he was trying to tell truth and to those that might listen. And then also the son of Martin Luther, the daughter of Martin Luther King, Alvita King, and son of the former head of the Congress on Racial Equality, Niger Innes. They need to bring some reason, but the media somehow never picked up on that.
No. But it was, Alvita King was a very, very gracious woman, the niece of Martin Luther King. And you know, after we sat down and talked, you know, she had a list of these things that she thought might help, you know, bring the community together. And after we spoke and toured the town, she realized that we were doing all those things and the community actually was together until all these folks came in and started burning stuff down.
That's an interesting testimony, and I had not even realized that. That needs to be, that's the word that needs to be gotten out for sure. Because when somebody of her persuasion comes in and she's already been impacted by the official media narrative, and she gets there and realizes that, oh, it's not exactly the way I heard it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And she had actually written down a list for our meeting of things that she thought would help. And when we were done, she said, "Wow, you've done everything on this list except, you know, for this one." And I don't recall exactly what that was, but I said, "Good."
The Justice Department got itself involved,
yes.
And they clearly, under the leadership, I guess it was Holder at the time, the Attorney General, he was not interested in making peace. He was interested, from what I can gather, not only your account, but other things that I've read, he was interested in using this time of trouble to bring about another agenda. Kind of glorify the left-wing narrative that racism was endemic, not only in Ferguson, but in the whole country. And unless you start doing the kind of changes that we demand be made, we're going to burn the place down. Now, Holder didn't quite put it that starkly, but my take is that that was really the alternative he was leaving.
Well, yeah, he had all kinds of things in their agenda that could have been, you know, accomplished through this. You know, they wanted to, of course, you know, more gun control, banning weapons, really, eliminating local police departments. They wanted a national police that they could control. But there was just so many things that they could bring out of this, you know. And he wanted to become a civil rights leader, too. You know, he saw this as an opportunity.
I hadn't even heard that they were talking about a national police force. That is really a very disturbing notion. Anybody that's ever seen how a national police force can go south on you really doesn't want to have that, because the ability to control gets less and less the further you get away from the local area. And that's why local policing, local sheriffs, local police chiefs are so much more responsive. Whatever their shortcomings, they're much more responsive to a local community than somebody like this state trooper that came in from outside, or maybe more so, people that came in from Washington and the Justice Department. They bring an agenda, and the only exceptions were people like Alveda King. Apparently, Billy Graham set up a rapid response team some time ago, and they came in. They were helpful. Christian cops that were trying to bring peace in a time of trouble. So it's not as if there weren't people trying to do good and do the right thing, but the media wasn't giving them any traction. And I think that's a big problem, is that we're going to have to learn how to deal with a media blackout. And you've pointed to part of it, is that the social media is a tremendous force. And if, God forbid, another Ferguson occurs, the police department's going to have at least one person who is full-time devoted to getting the word out through social media. Otherwise, yes, you could have Ferguson happen all over again.
Yeah, and it's probably going to. And I just hope that law enforcement takes heed to what happened there, through social media. But now you're looking at, all over the country, too. For example, after the Parkland High School shooting, all of a sudden, supposedly, high school students from around the country organized nationwide marches, complete with signs and slogans and shirts and stuff like that. It was the people, they're looking for a socialist type of agenda to organize some of these other things, like after the election, who are organizing. I mean, it was very easy to take all these high school kids and just organize them into an anti-gun movement.
Exactly. We've run out of time, which is not an unusual problem. We've been talking with Chief Thomas Jackson, Policing Ferguson. Folks, I hope you'll get that book. It's got lots of information, lots of lessons. And this is Larry Pratt, your host for the Second Amendment News Hour. Stay tuned next week.
Heart-related health problems affect millions of people each year. Maybe you're one of the many who suffer from issues related to angina pain, high blood pressure, congestive heart failure, unbalanced cholesterol, irregular heartbeat, or clogged arteries. There is a solution that doesn't involve expensive prescription drugs that only mask the problem and leave you with horrible side effects. If you are ready to live your life free of sickness, pain, and fear, live your life with increased vitality, energy, and youthfulness, and experience your body healing itself, then you're ready for Heart and Body Extract from Healthy Hearts Club. Here is what one satisfied customer had to say about Heart and Body Extract regarding his angina pain.
I haven't had an angina pain since I've been on it. The Heart Body Extract is just so great. I thank God that I was led to this product that's doing so much for me and that can do so much for other people.
Call to order your 2-month supply of Heart and Body Extract today. Call 1-866-295-5305 or go to hbextract.com.
It's a no-brainer. A Big Berkey water filter is the one you need, period. You need a water filter that removes chlorine, fluoride, pharmaceuticals, BPA, and other endocrine disruptors, pesticides, bacteria, viruses, and much more, right? And does it all at only 2 cents per gallon. Get the original, most trusted name in gravity water filtration, Big Berkey. And now GCN listeners receive 5% off ceramic filter systems using code GCN. Call or click 1-877-99-BERKEY or BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. That's 1-877-99-BERKEY.
Hunters, anglers, campers, and survivalists, get back to nature. Expand your horizons with the highest quality, most versatile, unique slingshots and slingbows on the market at slingbow.com. Slingbow products are compact and models start from just $17.98. They're perfect for your bug-out bag or storing in your vehicle. Give yourself and your loved ones the excitement and tradition of slingbow, a new frontier in archery and truly modern twist on this primitive survival tool. Feel the thrill only at slingbow.com.